WildTalkRadio.com.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Pac with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself as long as you have an action figure.
It's a tradition like no other. It is a Survivor Series, and it is live this Saturday on ESPN or Netflix. But there are no traditional Survivor Series matches. Instead, it's War Games. We're here to talk about it. This is WTR Sunday Night, Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTR live chat. If you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's not Prime Gaming. It's not Twitch Prime. It's just Prime. Support the channel by clicking the purple button below the screen. You can use creator code RockingSock in the Fortnite item shop because hashtag EpicPartner. I'm the producer, joined as always by the intern.
I need William Regal to come out on Saturday to say the line. He has to.
He's already did it. He already came and did his cameo line.
I understand he did the one cameo, but it is the actual day of days. It is the event. He needs to do it there.
Or he just does the video package.
That's fine. I just need to hear William Regal announce it. Like, Adam Pearce, no fault of his own, does a good version, but we need William Regal. He is the originator.
I mean, fair. Fair point. And we also have the one and only Tim Stein.
Yeah, good evening. Welcome to the preview edition Survivor Series of WTR Sunday Night. And just like the name of this episode implies, we're previewing Survivor Series. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Regal on Saturday night.
I mean, anything's possible these days.
This is truth. The hell was that?
I have no idea. Anyway, it's Survivor Series. It's not blood and guts, so there will not be anybody bleeding 5 minutes into the match. So, Brandon, I'm sorry.
There were people bleeding within, like, 2 minutes of matches last night. It's just... Look, I understand you want blood in your match, you want color, but... Like, sometimes it's just fucking ridiculous.
There probably won't be any barbed wire or bed of nails. You probably won't get that on Saturday.
You mean, wait, but here's the other thing. So, spoiler, we're going to talk about other places. So, remind me, what is the main rule of War Games?
It is to make your opponent, what, submit?
It's pinfall or submission, essentially, I believe. Or it, yeah, I think you can actually pin them to win, if I remember.
Yeah, I think they've had a pinfall, but it used to be just the person has to give up. That was the original point of Survivor Series.
Submit or surrender.
Yeah.
Remind me, what was the rule about the cage itself?
Isn't it once you leave, your team loses?
You're in the cage. The match has to be within. If any member of your team leaves the cage, you lose for your entire team.
Yes.
In Blood and Guts, it's more of a suggestion, the cage.
It's there.
It's a gimmick. It's not, like, at least with War Games, like, I love the fact when you have the people who fight at the top, and it's, you have the announcers remind you, if they take that one swing to the side and that person falls, the match is over. It's done. They lose. So I like the strategy every now and then of, we're going to lure someone up to the top of the cage, and hey, if we push them off, it's over. But no, you have, instead, you have the company with a roof on their cage, instead have people leave it all the time. I don't understand the logic. I know there is no logic to it, but
you're comparing WWE's adhesion to rules to AEW's looking for that fan pop.
Not just fan pop, it's just that idea of the purpose of a cage match. And I understand, and I mean, we saw this last night with their cage match as well. The purpose of a cage match is to be keeping out all of your opponent, you know, all of the rigmarole, and having two people fight in the ring in a vicious style match to see who is going to win. Will people ultimately find their way into the cage? Sure, I understand that. But every time that happens, it undermines the actual fact of why is there a cage? It's the same thing with Hell in a Cell. The reason you lock people in Hell in a Cell is for the two to beat the ever-living fuck out of each other, and when they leave the cell, it kind of takes something away. I get the whole, you know, Taker Mankind on top of the cage. Yes, that was a fantastic spot. Mick is amazing, you know, the fact he's alive right now is a testament to, you know, divine entities looking out for people. But for the biggest thing, it should be, if you have people in a cage, it should stay in a cage. You should not have people coming in all the time. You should not have people doing stuff. If you do, it is at the very beginning of a match, you know, before the cage door locks. As soon as the door locks, that should be it. It should be everything happens within. But I'm also probably a traditionalist and, you know, oh, I need to get over myself because, lol, look at all the crazy spots that happen.
But oh my god, look at all the crazy spots that could happen.
On Saturday, inside War Games, because we're going to get at least Io Sky on her trash can.
Yes, she will find a way to carabiner up a trash can to do her dive, or moonsault, or something or other.
Something. Her leap of faith. Yeah. It's like, please catch me, because I can't see what I'm doing.
Well, and I like in years past, or the one time in years past where it was like, all right, we're going to lock her out. So it gave you a purpose of, like, why she's going to do it. Or it's the same thing that happened to Roman in the one cell where, I think it was it against the Bloodline where they locked him out and he had to climb his way in?
I believe.
Like, that, I kind of go, okay, cool. Because the match can't technically start until he enters it, and he's going to get in come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. But once you're in, it should be, that's it.
Yeah.
And I know we'll also get the other spot that drives me nuts every year when it comes to War Games. You'll have your countdown. You'll have the one person run to the ring and spend about a minute and a half to 2 minutes of rummaging under the cage to find all this shit that they just chuck into the ring. And then by the time they actually get in there, they get like two moves in before the next person comes into the match.
My favorite thing about that is they built that into WWE 2K, where they have people, every time someone new comes in, they rummage around underneath the ring and throw something into the cage.
Oh my god.
It's like, it's built-in storytelling, even in the video game.
See, if that's going to be the case, if it's going to be like, all right, we're going to do War Games and we're going to introduce weapons, part of me is like, just put the weapons on the cage, like we've seen in like the Asylum match and other stuff, where it's like, all right, cool, we understand weapons are going to be a part of this. So have it, as soon as someone comes in, they just start to like take the shit off and start using it, instead of having to rummage around, because essentially that kills the momentum of someone coming into the match.
It does. Or at the very least, have them around the ring.
Yeah, have it where, like, they run over and it's like, all right, cool, I'm going to grab three chairs, throw them in the ring, and now I'm going. You just have the weapons ready to go and they can do stuff, as opposed to, because more times than not, it's always, like, one person is in charge of bringing in a certain item, and they spend 2 minutes looking under the ring trying to find the one. And I remember especially the 1 year it was, they had the gimmicked chairs for the Undisputed Era, where they had spray painted the logo onto the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Kyle O'Reilly or it was Adam Cole who they ran down to the ring and they threw the apron up and they're trying to find the chairs and they just can't. And so it's just one of those, like, instead, grab regular chairs, throw them in, just get going with it. And it's like, no, they had to find the special chairs. And so it took them forever to get to that spot. And I remember I'm watching it going, just move on, guys. Just go. And look, you know, checking my watch to see how much longer this was going to take.
Yeah. But let's start talking about the women's war games. We learned this past Friday on SmackDown the final team, the final members of each team, as it'll be Rhea, Io, Alexa, Charlotte, and AJ Lee taking on Nia Jax / Legend, the Kabuki Warriors, and Becky Lynch.
Wait, Becky and AJ are in the match? What? No one saw that one coming when there was open spots.
The only people who missed that were blind.
I also
yes,
don't
that was know. A Captain Obvious moment.
I also don't know what to think of the kind of manufactured drama they're trying to introduce with Charlotte and Rhea. Because to me, it would be one thing if it was Rhea looking at Charlotte and saying, I don't trust you. Because I think there's a long line of the fact of, like, Charlotte doing shady shit, and especially shady shit to Rhea. I don't know if it works in the inverse. I don't know if I really trust the fact of Charlotte looking at Rhea Ripley and going, you know, I can't trust you. It's like, wait, Charlotte, you know who your father is, right? You know your lineage in terms of backstabbing and cheating and being just, for lack of a better term, an evil bitch.
I think the lack of trust is because, well, Rhea constantly beats her.
Well, I get that, but the thing is like, if Charlotte is the face here, and so is Rhea, but, like, you have the pairing of Rhea and Io, and there's no inclination that, like, Rhea would turn. There's no inclination that, like, you know, yeah, they're untrustworthy. You've got Charlotte and Alexa, who have been doing the whole BFF thing, and the whole earning of trust between Alexa and Charlotte. Mm-hmm. But it just seems so out of left field that, all right, we're going to get these four teams, or these four people, and, like, when they first made the announcement of War Games, they're all in the ring together, and it's like, yeah, we've got this, and, you know, all of a sudden, on the next week, Charlotte just drops the whole, like, you know, Lexi, I've got your back, and, you know, I support what you want to do, but Rhea, I don't trust you at all. It just felt like we need something to hold this over for 1 week, because we can't just have them being like, hey, we've got four people, we're getting ready for War Games, we still need the one. So, like, what can we do to manufacture drama for this particular match? I know, let's say Charlotte can't trust Rhea and she's backing out, and then come SmackDown, Alexa gets beat down, Charlotte saves her, and it's kind of like, all right, begrudgingly, I'm back in. Like,
I'll say this about it. At least it's not just, hey, because she's a babyface, they get along. I like there's a little bit of tension, just because it always, when a heel becomes a babyface, they always just get naturally along with the other babyfaces. At least resistance. At least they
can tell the
story
better.
They could tell the story better. I don't disagree with that part. But I like, at least they're acknowledging baby faces shouldn't just naturally get along like usually they do.
See, I feel like this is leading to a moment that we've already seen in War Games. Because we had the whole Charlotte can't trust her teammate before with Becky. And it was that idea of, like, I can't trust, you know, there's too much bad blood. I don't know if you have my back. And then there was the tease in the cage. And then you got that big spot where they were standing there looking at each other. And then they hugged and everyone lost their mind and they finished the match. I feel like you're gonna just get that same spot here. It just so happens to be with Rhea and Charlotte, in the two-face role.
I mean, that's possible.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm still looking forward to the women's war game match because the one thing that I love about the women's war game is they look at what, or they see all the stuff that happens with the men, and their response is, we're going to go bigger. We're going to go better. Let's do it.
Yeah. When you boil it down, at least for the casual fan who just like follows along, watches the shows and doesn't pay attention to the interwebs and the IWC and all of the, you know, enhanced output, if you will. Women's war games is going to boil down to the majority of people are going to be worried or concerned or interested, if you will, over one thing. One member on each team facing off against each other. And I'm talking AJ Lee and Becky when they get face to face in that double ring. So the manufactured storyline and oh, Charlotte is, you know, I can't trust you. And that's not really logical. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't matter because that's not the big story.
So let me ask you this, Tim, since that is the showdown of the match, where do you throw it in the match? Like, basically, when does AJ come into the match?
Oh, you draw that out as long as you can. You wait, because the longer you wait, the bigger the pop. The bigger the pop, the more off the hook it's going to seem. The closer to the hype it will get. So you hold them back from each other for like almost three quarters of that match.
So you have AJ coming in last for her team?
Not necessarily.
But that was my question. Where do you have her coming in?
Where do you have her enter? Through five.
Me, the way I would do it, AJ comes in at fourth, but Becky's in at third.
Okay.
And that way, you've got enough people there in the ring where you can tease it and have somebody else intercept for whatever reason, just because it's opportunistic, right? And then finally, the girls square up against each other because they're unencumbered by anybody else. And here's the other thing about it. You don't book it so it's a very long, drawn-out affair between the two of them, because you've got a big, huge match coming up with these two down the road. You want to whet the appetite for that match. You think about it. The character Darth Vader in the original Star Wars movie had 11 minutes of screen time, and he wound up villain of the year for that year, because the way George Lucas did it, he had everybody salivating for the big baddie Darth.
All right, yeah. Tim, I have an interesting question for you.
Uh-oh.
So you have AJ coming in fourth, you have Becky coming in third. So essentially it would be Becky and then AJ immediately after in terms of order.
Yeah.
Who's opening the match for either team then?
Oh, shit. Okay, that one I have a hard time with.
Oh, that one's easy.
Okay, let's hear your take, producer.
Io and Asuka, that's your starter.
Okay, I'm not arguing. I'm not even gonna devil's advocate that. No, forget it.
I mean, that's the easy one you go with. There's the tension already built up there. There's the confrontation, and they can go for 5 minutes together before you send someone else.
I was going to say, whoever you send in first has to be your workhorse. They've got to be the one that you're going, you're in this match for 20 to 30 minutes. Sure, you get your rest spots, but...
Because...
Yeah, okay. Not... Yeah, that's definitely EO for that team, but is that Oscar for the other team?
Well, it's not going to be Lash. It's not going to be Nia. No. Either you...
You won't burn Becky early. Because that she plays into the man gimmick of, and she's going to try and show or grandize herself of like, no, I'm coming in last.
Or it's either Asuka or Kairi at that point, and Asuka, Io is your bigger, hey, let's tease a future match between them set up like they like to do.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time thinking different. I really am.
Because
as soon as you said it, all of the 100-watt light bulbs just lit up.
Right, because you wait, you go to, because when Alexa comes in, you'll get the big, another pop. Charlotte comes in, you'll get the pop. Rhea, etc. And Rhea's working with a broken nose, so you don't want her starting first. And then you save AJ towards the end. So you have it build up. And it'll be interesting to see how the pops kind of sound on Saturday. Because they're in a stadium for War Games. This is the first time in an actual stadium. They're the Padres Stadium, Petco Park. So one, it's a baseball stadium. And two, first time we've seen War Games in that big of an environment. So it'll be interesting to see how loud they are for this style of match and how close the fans, you know, they kind of seat the building for War Games.
Building off of what Tim said earlier, with the big story being AJ and Becky, I see a certain scenario playing out but I have AJ coming in last. Because you usually have that one spot where, like... And have they announced who has advantage yet?
They have not, because it's on SmackDown, and that's...
Okay.
Out there, if you really want to know, it's out there, but it's not airing until Friday.
Okay. I have no clue who it is, but for me, what I would do is I would have AJ being the last one to enter the ring and playing into the whole Becky part of it, because I think Becky would be like, oh yeah, I want to beat her down, but at the same time, she realizes that AJ's had her number for a number of times, right?
Yeah.
Cost her the IC title, got her the one up when she first came back and beat the hell out of Becky. So what I would end up doing is you have that spot where Becky is with the heels in the other ring, AJ comes in, and Becky is just kind of playing general and like trying to send people at AJ the entire time.
It's basically like, being the cowardly heel of a faction.
Kind of like, you go get her, go get her. And either AJ fights off who it needs to be, or it's that kind of thing like if it's Lash or Nia and you're kind of like, I don't know if AJ can take her out, as they're coming to get AJ, you have like Rhea come out of nowhere and just boom, blindside Nia, and it's like, oh, Nia just got taken out, shit, Asuka, go get her, go get her. And then same kind of thing happens where either someone takes her out or AJ neutralizes her, and you finally get to that spot where it's just Becky and AJ, the fans are going nuts. And Becky can play up that moment of like, oh shit, I can't get out of this now. And you have that brief interaction between them that will lead ultimately to the singles one-on-one ultimate, you know, big contest coming up at like Survivor or at like Royal Rumble or whenever you have it. But I just see that moment playing out, and I could see it working the crowd up even more in that respect.
With all that, who wins, right?
It's hard because I don't think both War Games matches are going to go for the same side, if you know what I mean. I think you kind of have to split face and heel with this. And with what I'm looking at in terms of the men's side, I'm like, I don't know if with the team you have on the men's side, I don't know if the faces are not, or, you know, are going to lose that one. So it's hard to pick a winner for this, though. Trying to work it through in my head. I could see the heel stealing it here, but I don't know who and I don't know how. But I guess I'll go faces.
So you have in your head you have the heels winning, so why don't you just pick the heels? Why don't you just do it?
Because the thing is if I'm going to pick the heels, in my head I have to be like, who's picking up the win? How is it going to happen? What comes from this? And I don't think it's Becky steals one from AJ, because if that's the case, then Becky just goes, I've already beaten you. I don't need, you know, what's the point? And besides, Becky's bigger thing would be possibly trying to get back her IC title that was taken by Maxine with a little help from AJ. But I also don't know if, like, okay, if the loss comes from Io or Charlotte or Alexa, what does that do in terms of advancing stuff? I think Lash is going to come out of this looking... I think this is going to be a way to try and spotlight Lash Legend to help motivate her forward. That's why I'm saying it's a hard time for me to choose the heel team, is because I don't know how they will win, and I can't conceivably come up with it in my head.
Babyface, you're doing the babyfaces.
Yeah, ultimately, I just look at that and I'm like, I can't justify a heel win, even though, in my opinion, they probably will win because of, like I said, breakdown of card. But because I can't figure out how I'm going to do it, I'm just going to go with the faces because that reason.
Tim?
Well, I see a better setup for future storyline if the babyface team wins here. I've got a different thought process for the men's, but it is like I said, the main attraction is Becky and AJ, and I just get the feeling that this is going to be a basically the one of several appetizers for when they finally put that match together. And it's a more satisfying potential in my thought process for future storyline purposes to have the base team win.
Okay. Before we get to the men's War Games, we have two other matches, including the Women's World Championship. Stephanie Vaquer taking on Nikki Bella. What do we think?
Nikki's back as heel, which is her natural inclination, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was one of those things, like, when she started to come back and align herself with Stephanie, I think we all kind of went, all right, we can see where this is going. I think it'll give Stephanie someone that she can work with in terms of this card. Nikki's been a pretty decent worker. She's put in her time. She's become a better wrestler than when she was, you know, originally part of the Divas era. And she of course, had the longest reign as women's champion for a long time. Until, I believe, Bayley took it, right?
Maybe.
I thought that was one of the things with
it might have been. I don't remember.
But, so, like, Nikki has that kind of lineage, that gravitas, even though some people don't want to acknowledge it because, for lack of a better term, it's Nikki Bella. But that being said, Stephanie Vaquer just got the belt, and you can tell that they really see something with her in terms of marketability, how she can perform, how she connects with the audience. And with this, I think it's just one of those, like, we needed an opponent for her right now, and a lot of women are tied up in the War Games match. So I think the match will be good overall. I think especially Stephanie is going to help Nikki, which is kind of funny to say considering the roles in this match. But I think Stephanie will help overall with the match. She'll sell for Nikki. She'll make her look good. Nikki will play the heel, which is very comfortable for her. But ultimately, I think Stephanie is going to come out of this retaining because there's still so much to do with her.
Do you agree, Tim?
Well, I think I made myself abundantly clear my thoughts and opinions on the Bella Twins way back when, in the olden days, didn't I?
Probably.
Yeah, I always thought they were overrated and they got further than they should have gotten. And they got wins that they shouldn't have had, partly because of, I don't know, different reasons, right? And you were thinking it was Bayley. It was actually Charlotte who ended Nikki's record reign, by the way.
Ended the reign or took over the timing?
No, he's talking about, Brent was talking about the overall timing of the reign, not who beat.
Yeah, not who beat Nikki. It was Nikki held the record for the longest reign as women's champion, and I thought Bayley beat her time.
Oh, as Divas champion.
Not Divas, as just longest reigning women's champion in the company, in the modern era.
In the modern era. Oh, okay. I get it.
Because no one's going to touch Moolah in terms of holding the belt for the longest period of time.
Oh, my goodness. Ow.
So what's your take on the match, Tim?
Oh, shit. Well, you said that Steph is going to sell for Nikki because she basically has to. Even when she was wrestling full time, she wasn't that great in the ring. She came back and the matches that we saw her in were really not good. They really weren't. Like Stephanie's a better wrestler than Nikki was. I expect to not be amazed or thrilled or excited during this match, because I don't expect it to be a barn burner, and I do expect the eagle-eyed to be able to point out the extra amount of work that I'm expecting Steph is going to have to put into it. At the end of the day, like winner and still champion is going to be my call on this one. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong as far as match quality, but I'm not expecting a barn burner.
Well, with Nikki working heel, she can, for lack of a better term, she can Randy Orton it and slow it down and be the powerhouse and take the tempo down if need be.
Yeah, but you have to be a really good wrestler to do that. And I've never seen Nikki as really good in that ring, heel or babyface. So, I get what you're saying and I understand it. But, the star that's going to shine in that match is Steph.
It is for the Intercontinental Championship. It is John Cena and Dominic Mysterio.
John finally became a Grand Slam champion.
It only took how long?
Look, he's checking all the boxes before he leaves, okay? He got to become the 17th time champion that people wanted / expected. He now became a Grand Slam champion. You know, he's just, he's getting all the stuff done on the bucket list that he needed to. And not necessarily a bad thing. He gets to work with Dominic and put Dominic in another big spot. Dom got his chance to shine this past WrestleMania, winning the IC title. He got that moment where, you know, he ran back to the ring and got the adulation of the fans. He's proven he's over. You can hear that with every reaction he gets, whether or not that people want to admit that they like him.
I am really, really curious as to what the reaction is going to finally be when he is finally turned babyface.
I'm dying
and
to see
all of the people behind him, all of the fans that are behind him actually get to cheer him instead of, you know, having fun booing him.
I'm waiting to see what his reaction is going to be on Saturday, because he's home.
Yeah.
So when they make that announcement, you know, from San Diego, California, and it's Dom, like, sure, you may still get boos, but I suspect it's going to be one of those people are going to cheer for John because it's John, and on his, you know, next to last appearance, they'll give him his flowers. But I think there's going to be basically just as big of an ovation for Dom.
Well, my hope for the crowd reaction during the match is 50-50 split. Let's go Dom, let's go Cena. Let's go Dom, let's go Cena. That, honestly, that's what I want to hear, because I think that would just rock it.
Let's go Cena, Dominic. Let's go Cena, Dominic.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be a pip?
Oh, I think that would be great, and it's, again, shows, I mean, hell, who would have thought years ago during the COVID era when Dominic Mysterio was brought into the feud with Rey Mysterio and Brock Lesnar that we would be to the point where an entire arena was going to cheer for him, was going to cheer for the person on, you know, essentially at the top of the ladder between Dominic and Eddie in that match long ago from SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
The thought that kid with the worst mullet and even worse mustache,
thank you, somebody else agrees,
would be at the point where legitimately he is one of the biggest reactions that the company gets show in and show out. No one would have told you that. No, everyone would have been like, that kid, Dom's son, who is okay, I mean, kind of fumbling his way through doing the 619, okay, whatever you say. And now you've got him performing in AAA. You have him performing, you know, being the mega champion for them. You have him holding the second highest title for the brand in WWE. You have him carrying the segments with the Judgment Day and people actually looking forward to those segments. It's remarkable what they have been able to do in terms of building him up to where he is today.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that being said, the WWE has done a good job. However, if Dom wasn't the character that he is, it would have fallen flat and there's no way it would have gotten over. I mean, this kid has gotten it over, and we all know, here it comes again. We all know how, when I see a wrestler who, in my opinion, is still too green, I really am slow to come around. Not with Dominic. You know, I couldn't stand him. He's getting all this high profile attention and shit because he's Ray's kid. And it's just, his work was stilted. And he was, in my opinion, at the time, put too far ahead in the class than he should have been. But at the same time, no wrestler that I have ever said is too green has ever turned around so quickly as Dominic. And I mentioned this, maybe a month ago, about how this kid is impressive as a son of a bitch. And it takes me to that point of being just a fan where I love to hate the kid, but I look forward to his wrestling matches against whoever the hell he winds up wrestling against.
They sent him out to do media, and he handled himself pretty well on ESPN media. He's going to be the future. He's going to be the future guy. He has it.
Basically, he may be a nepo baby, but he's earning it.
He's earning it. Yeah.
He's one of those.
I have like the absolute utmost respect for people like Dominic because of the fact he's working his ass off to earn it.
Well, I was going to say, it's one of those things of there's the Nepo baby in terms of all you get is based off of your name. And we've seen that throughout wrestling. It's just, okay, this person is only here because of who they are. And then there's people who, yes, they have the name, but they also are willing to put in the work. And therefore, it's like, sure, the name got them their foot in the door, but then they walked through it and essentially became who they are. And we've also seen that. Perhaps someone like a Randy Orton, a Cody Rhodes, where it's like, yes, they have the name. They have the, oh, they're a second generation, third generation star. But they've since created their own identity, and now it's not just, oh, it's Bob Orton's kid. Oh, it's Dusty's son. That's Cody Rhodes. And yes, Dusty is there, but it's still Cody. And Dom has kind of gotten to that point where it's like, there's the Mysterio name.
Don't call him Ray's kid.
There's the Guerrero name as well. But yeah, it's okay. That got him to the door. He still pulled it open and walked through.
No, he's kicking it down.
Does he kick it down and win back the Intercontinental title?
The outcome of this match is a really difficult one to call because you kind of want to see Dominic regain that title so they can set it up down the road because they're gonna break off Judgment Day at some point in time. They're going to put Finn up against Dom, and it would be fantastic if Finn versus Dom was for gold, in this case be the IC title. But on the same token, like the other side of that same coin, Cena's last go round, and when is his final appearance?
December 13th, Saturday night's main event.
2 weeks so from Survivor Series.
So like 3 weeks away. Wouldn't it mean something more if the winner of the tournament was fighting Cena for that title?
At this stage, yeah.
And then Cena can do the job, and as unwritten rules as dictated, when you go out on your back, unless your name is Trish Stratus. It would be absolute perfection, I think. For Cena going out on his back with the title being won by the winner of the tournament.
So you're going Cena.
Like I said, this is a really tough one. I'm still undecided. So I'm going to let Brent make his pick and then come back to me.
So Tim is essentially saying that this time is now is a de facto IC title tournament.
I'm saying it would be perfect if it was.
But I'm just saying the fact of, like, the way that you're playing this storyline out is that whoever essentially wins the tournament, because Cena's going to go out on his back, the purpose of this tournament in general has been, all right, who's going to be the IC champion?
Mm-hmm.
Which ultimately means probably Gunther getting that belt back that he carried for 666 days.
Possibly, yes.
Which would make a lot of sense for a Gunther promo to talk about wanting to reestablish the legacy of his championship.
And he was a great champ, but that IC title was Gunther, and Gunther was the IC title, in my opinion.
So you're picking Dom, right, Brendan? Is that what you're saying?
Again, just like the women's thing, it's hard for me because the fact of I look at Cena's last match and I go, does it need the IC title? Does that match need to have that belt involved? Or is it the fact of the career of John Cena ends tonight? Is that enough?
Take the championship out of it, right? We'll just take it out of it for right now. Cena winning and riding high on momentum into his last match, wouldn't that be the better story?
Yes. No, I understand that because you don't want him to lose here and then lose 2 weeks later, and that's quote-unquote the legacy of John Cena at that moment. You don't want those last two lasting images before what will probably be we see him in April to be, oh, look, he lost. Oh, look, he lost again.
You kind of want him riding high into that match.
You do, It's just the fact that the IC title is involved is what complicates it for me. Because, yes, I want him to go into that final match on the roll. I want him to be like, all right, he picked up the win. He's going into his last match against whoever the tournament winner is. It's going to be a barn burner. Okay, the thing happens, and, you know, he does his curtain call in front of the fans, and that's it. The fact that title is also involved is, again, like I said, what makes me go, because I don't know if I want him carrying that belt the extra 2 weeks just to be like, okay, yeah, he's going to lose here just so he can drop the belt on his way out. And, I mean, we all kind of think, yes, it's going to be the foregone conclusion. Cena loses his last match. Just the way that he's in, you know, he is of the business. He understands. You go out on your back. But at that point, it just looks like, okay, Cena is just the vessel for the IC title for 2 weeks to get it to that point, to drop it to whoever wins the tournament.
You're making it sound like you're worried that it winds up the final match being outshone by the fact the title's involved.
Well, not outshone. It's just, in my opinion, it doesn't need it. It's the fact that the last match of John Cena just should be the last match of John Cena.
Yeah, but another way to look at it would be legacy, and what is the biggest compliment somebody retiring could pay an up-and-comer or a current young superstar who's got years ahead of them? Not just doing the job, not just giving the rub, but passing the torch.
I'm sorry, I just have to laugh at that. The way you just phrased everything.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm saying the title does not need to be involved is, hey, Rock, the last time someone had a huge, and not in the, well, someone fought for a title in their last match and lost, but before contractual obligations, someone had a retirement match, and the title was involved, right? Okay. In another company.
Yeah.
And we all went in with the whole, hey, he's going to do the right thing. He's going to go out on his back. He's going to help, you know, put over young guys or young-ish guys on his way out.
A couple of young
How
bucks.
Did that work?
He didn't put the young bucks over.
No, they made it so that he won the belt, and then immediately the next show, the belts were vacated.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And that's
for someone
on the same stature.
Yeah, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Cena wins his last match and does the exact same thing.
I wouldn't be surprised at that, or I wouldn't be surprised if something happened where you have the tournament winner and they threw a curveball where it's like, it's not who we think it is or is going to be, and they have the match, and then something happens after the match, like an unofficial match or something along those lines. I could see that be something wonky.
All right, you guys have hemmed and hawed. Who's winning?
Say a name, Brent. I had a name down on the spreadsheet already.
Say it.
Your 17-time champion, John Cena, is who I had.
Tim?
Yeah, I, from the beginning of this, was waiting to be talked out of my thinking, and it didn't happen. I've got Cena retaining over Dom.
Men's War Games, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, The Usos, and Roman Reigns taking on the Vision of Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, Logan Paul, along with Drew McIntyre and the other Paul Heyman guy, Brock Lesnar.
Team Heyman versus Team Rhodes.
Team Rhodes, Team Roman, Team Punk.
Yeah.
Lots of big names in this one.
Oh, yeah.
Does Bronson Reed have any, flashbacks from
a
year
God,
ago?
Oh, yeah.
He completely eviscerated his ankle.
It was a year ago.
Yeah, he came off the top of that cage and just, boom, there went his leg.
Some war flashbacks. War flashbacks to when that happened.
PTSD, baby!
I'm just looking forward to the fact that Logan Paul is going to be locked in a cage with 9 other people who probably want to beat the ever-living shit out of him.
But only five
can. At least seven of them would.
But only five can, so, you know.
Yeah, technically more can. It's just it would hurt their team. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's at least one or two people on Team Vision that want to just at least sucker punch him. Just once.
Oh, this is going to be fun. It's going to be a fight, and there's going to be a lot of spotlighting, I think.
Rock brought up a really good point in terms of there's a lot of really big names involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that, to relate this to other sports, when we see things like a home run derby rock, do you usually see a lot of big name people in it?
No.
You'll get maybe one or two, but for the most part, it's like, eh, okay, there's this person or that person. All right, whatever.
When was the last time you had a stacked home run derby?
Oh, God.
1998. Sosa, McGuire, you know, when they actually cared.
Sosa and McGuire when they were, they had, for the steroid scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and every now and then you have, like, the one big name involved. Like, you know, an Aaron Judge or a Alonso or someone who's in the home run derby. You're like, okay, I kind of want to see this person.
You have a star, and then the rest, you know, you look for the upstart to compete.
Yeah, you've got the young, you know, first or second time all-stars where it's like, all right, you get your chance to hit some home runs. And then most people will try to get away from it because it completely, like, screws up your swing and all that other stuff. Unlike that, in this War Games, what I like is the fact that you've got so many heavy hitters involved in it. And I understand wrestling is different, and this is a huge, you know, this is the main event. So yeah, a lot of people want to be involved. But it's still a kind of match where you're going, if someone doesn't want to be involved in a two-ring cage match, because what happens to Bronson can happen to you in this kind of situation, you would get it. But you have Brock Lesnar, who is an attraction, who has never been in a War Games before. You've got Breaker and Reed, your two big people that you're trying to make on the up. You've got Drew McIntyre, who, you know, former world champion, very big on the card, and he's been in War Games before, gets to come in and just lay waste to some people. And then you've got Logan Paul, who will do something crazy in the match, off the cage or just crazy in general. And then you have your two world champions, the most decorated tag team in the company, and your longest reigning world champion and, you know, headliner as well on the other team. This is ridiculous, the star power you have in this match.
Yeah.
And just think, it would be higher if it weren't for the fact of, okay, you probably sub out Logan Paul if someone wasn't hurt. Or do you sub out Drew McIntyre?
Mm-hmm.
Because if Seth had not been hurt, he would be in this match.
Yeah, I would assume Logan Paul is not in.
Yeah, but in that case, you would have The Vision, Breaker, Reed, and Rollins with McIntyre and Lesnar. Holy shit, that is a team.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of amazing the fact that you have a lot of people who have been in War Games already in this match, so they know what to expect.
Yeah.
No, even substituting Logan Paul for Seth Rollins is still a pretty formidable bunch. Reluctantly giving Logan Paul his due.
Logan understands the spot, and he understands, like, what his role is. And that's one thing I think goes farther than a lot of people, I think, want to give credit for, is he knows what he is. He's not going to turn away from that skid.
Yeah, I'm never going to be a fan of Logan Paul, and I'm not talking about the character. I'm talking about the person. I'm never going to like the person, but I can overlook that and admit that, surprisingly, he is good and a lot better in that ring than I ever would have expected him to be. So, but yeah, it's going to be fun. And when I say there's going to be a lot of spotlights in this match, again, it's going to be, as far as setup goes, for future matchups and such. It's going to be old grudges and it's going to be new grudges.
Yeah.
And when we see the one-on-ones, they're going to mean something. As opposed to just, okay, these two guys are going to get their moment, then those two guys are going to get their moment. No, these two guys are going to get their moment as a precursor to what's coming up down the road. Same with those two guys. And then these guys, when they had their one-on-one moment in that match. And I'm looking forward to the Women's War Games, because I'm looking forward to seeing how they book that appetizer, if you will. I'm more looking forward to this match because there's more sample more sampling, more appetizers being served up. And when you're using a big platform such as War Games to set up your storylines, potentially leading up to WrestleMania 5 months down the road, 5.5 months down the road, it's just at the time in the moment, you might not realize it, but When the story finally comes to a head and you look back, you're like, all right, yeah. And it's just from, like, again, speaking as me as a fan, it's just a cooler moment overall when the final payoff finally hits. And I'm expecting a lot of setups for a few final payoffs, as well as rekindled grudges, of which there's going to be a couple that you shouldn't discount or look away from either. Getting down to looking at the match itself, if ever there was a case of the heel team being more cohesive and more on the same page than the babyface team, it's this year, precisely because of the big names and the overarching individual different storylines. And in a rarity, I think the babyface team has more big egos, individual agendas than the heel team. And you can actually further things along with your product by having the heel team win in this situation. I'm actually picking Team Lesnar, Team Heyman, whatever you want to call it. Team Logan. Logan Heyman.
That's Tim's pick, right?
So it's funny that Tim mentions the fact of he sees more cohesion on the heel team, because don't get me wrong, I think the heels are probably going to win this one. Now that I said at the beginning, I don't know how, if terms of the faces, when I first talked about the men's team of like, oh, I don't know, there's so much star power over there. I hate to say this, there's one person on that team that I look at and I go, yeah, he can eat a pin here. He can take the fall for the face team.
Don't, he shouldn't though. That makes it too obvious.
Big Jim?
Yeah, you got to have the one the big names lose.
Yeah, I'm with you there, but I'm saying, like, it's one of those things where, like, when we talk about, like, the classic War Games, and there was I always go back to the one with, you know, Flying Brian, and he got just put into the cage by Sid, and then dropped on his head. In that match, you looked at the people on the teams, and you kind of went, yeah, he's the one that's probably going to. And ultimately, he was. I can see I want to see an extension of the War Games conflict we saw last year with Punk and Roman. Because we saw Punk come in to the War Games match as the 5-on-5, you know, Paul Heyman bringing him in for the favor. And then we saw those moments in the cage where Roman was trying to dictate the match and blocking Punk from entering. I want to see what happens when they get into the cage this year, if it's like Punk looks over at Roman and is kind of like, are we going to do this again? Or if Roman's kind of like, we're cool this year. Everything, you know, like we have the plan. We're united against Paul. But ultimately, when I look at the heel team, like, I understand cohesion in terms of like Breaker and Reed. Those two were on the same page. But when I look at things like Brock Lesnar, Lesnar's not a guy who follows orders. He's a guy that goes in and does what he wants to. Will he listen to Paul? Yes. Will he do stuff for a payday? Sure. But if
you're picking Brock as your wild card.
But I'm just saying, like, if Braun gets in Brock's way, is Brock going to be like, nah, cool, go ahead and beat the shit out of him? Or is it more like,
get out of my way, kid.
You're in my way. Exactly. Yep. He's looking at him like, hey, pup. At which point, you know, Braun Breaker is like, I'm no pup. I'm, you know, I am of the Steiner lineage. I am a kick-ass on my own. I don't need to listen to you, old man.
Oh, and my God. Just thinking of Brock Lesnar getting called the old man. That hurts.
But it's like, but ultimately, I mean, look at it. It's Brock and new Brock.
Yep.
And it's kind that of. Kind of thing. Like, you could have Braun go like, you're the old version. I'm the update. And you have Brock kind of sitting there like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, you're Windows XP, I'm Windows 11.
But you've got that. You have the history between Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre.
Yeah.
And again, you could have that thing with Drew doesn't necessarily like to follow orders. Is he an opportunist? Will he be in this match to get his hands on Cody and beat the shit out of whoever he wants? Sure. But again, what happens if he's trying to beat up Cody and Brock comes over and is like, I'm going to get some hands in. Is Drew going to be like, go for it? Or is it like, no, this is mine. And you have that tension there. So when you're talking about the fact that you can see storylines coming out of this, I can too, but it's not necessarily because you're facing off against the other team. I see some storylines coming from on team, there's issues.
Now, I never said one versus the other. I never specified, and I did say old grudges coming back. Even though I did say, in my opinion, my gut feeling is the heel team has got a little more cohesion. That never, ever was meant to imply there wasn't going to be any tension between any of them.
Oh, right. No, and I understand that. I'm not saying to you specifically. I'm saying in general, the idea of, like, when people see this, it's like, oh, yeah, there's matchups, you know, Lesnar, Cody, Lesnar, Punk, all that. Like, yeah, there's history there and, like, bringing back old feuds. But, like you acknowledged and like I was pointing out, there's some things where it's like, no, there's some stuff that's going to come from this, from their own team that you look at and go, oh, maybe it will be Braun versus Brock at Mania, and this is where you start to plant the seeds. Maybe this is where you start to go, okay, maybe you have people who are heels now, but not so much in 2 to 3 months. But ultimately, when I look at this, I see it as, I see Team Heyman picking up the win here, because I think there's more on that side that needs the win coming out of this, because you have the two champions on the one side, and I think the heels picking up a win here set some stuff up moving forward for who challengers can be and where you may go in terms of, like, Rumble Mania moving forward.
There you go. That's War Games Survivor Series, which is this Saturday on ESPN. And someone's phone.
Phone went off, and so I shut her down quick. Sorry.
It's good. And on Netflix this Saturday, I think at 7 Eastern? Question mark?
7 Eastern, 4 Pacific.
Hey, wait a minute. Who did you pick for Men's War Games?
I picked Heyman.
Okay.
Why?
Because I blanked right out and forgot.
Yeah. No, I picked Team Heyman because also after I picked the face team for the women, I needed
to balance it out.
Some difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I needed to balance out the card, essentially.
But that will do for another edition of WTRS Tonight, Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Here's where schedules get wonky. Tomorrow night, it's the Raw Post Show. Whenever Monday Night Raw ends, we are live to talk about it this Monday as we head into Survivor Series this weekend. Tuesday will be the special edition of The Rack, our Gobble Gobble Wobble Wobble Thanksgiving special, because, you know, can't do the show Thursday because it's Thanksgiving. Turkey. So we'll be live Turkey Day. So we'll be live Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, to preview Survivor Series. Saturday night will be episode 899 of CB Radio, otherwise known as the Intern's Choice Awards. This Saturday, 11:30 p.m. Eastern. And we'll be back next Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern to review Survivor Series War Games. You can check out 40 Days of John Cena on our social media channels at Wild Talk Radio on Twitter, Instagram.com/Wild Talk Radio, Facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network, and if you like YouTube Shorts, it's YouTube.com/Rack Radio Show. You can find the 40 Days of John Cena there. It's at WTR Sunday on Facebook and Twitter. Tim has socials.
I have socials. You can find me on the X, formerly Twitter, platform at Flames Forums. You should follow me there if you don't yet, because, hell, I'm the best thing going on Twitter.
Okay.
Just ask me.
Right.
Yeah, you can follow me on a variety of social media, either Twitter / X, Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky, at Kane Kittens or Kane.Kittens. If you do follow me, you get to see my thoughts on certain shows as they may happen, because things come up and I have opinions, like last night. So yeah, you can find me on those socials.
Chad, if you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's called not Prime Gaming, not Twitch Prime, just Prime. Click the purple button below the screen. You could use Courier Code Rocket Sock in the Fortnite item shop because hashtag epic partner. Brand new season coming up this weekend as well. So new battle passes, all the things. New skins, kill Bill? I don't know. We'll see. But use the code hashtag epic partner. Tim, send us home.
Well, that's it, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. Enjoy Raw and the post show tomorrow night. And to everybody who lives in the excited states of America, in advance from a Canadian, which is me, I'm going to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. And hope that you all actually get along with the families this year for a change. That being said, go do something, because we're done. We're getting out of here. Time for a beer. Good night.
WildTalkRadio.com.